Recordings are started.
Thank you very much. We'll start momentarily. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is Thomas Rickert speaking, the GNSO appointed co-chair to the CCWG, and I would like to welcome you all to this 82nd call of the CCWG on Tuesday, February the 2nd, 2016, starting at 6 UTC, which is an early hour in my time zone, but I see that for others the time zone is even more unpleasant. But I hope that we're going to have an interesting and fruitful discussion today. And as usual, we would like to start by taking the roll call from the remote participation room. So can I ask those who are on the phone bridge only to speak up so that we can add them to the list?
Thomas, it's Jordan Carter here. I'm only on the phone for the next 10 minutes.
Thanks very much, Jordan. We will add you to the list. There was someone else.
Yeah, this is Jim. I'm on Andrew only. Thank you.
So that was Sean, if I'm correct, and there was a third person.
Yes, it's Sébastien Bachelet only on the audio bridge. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sébastien. Anyone else? That doesn't seem to be the case. Do we have any updates to statements of interest? That doesn't seem to be the case as well. That allows us to move to the second agenda item, which is the third reading on recommendation 11. And the plan for this meeting was, and there was quite some discussion surrounding it, to take the discussion on this recommendation to a poll or a vote. There was a discussion even on the terminology to be used, as you know, according to our charter, when we have reached a stage where our group is not able to find consensus easily, the co-chairs have the option to ask for a poll amongst the members that are being devoted to this group by the chartering organizations. We have, as co-chairs, made clear at the outset of our work that we would try to avoid this in order to be able to maintain an atmosphere where no distinction between participants and members needs to be made. We think that is most inclusive. Also, we think that it is better for the group and for the outcome of our group to be able to present consensus proposals rather than results that have been reached by means of polling or voting. There has been considerable debate on the list about this and how we would conduct the this type of decision making. So we have prepared for that. But there was also considerable discussion on substance. And you will remember that when we announced that we would now move to a different form of decision making, we also said that we would not proceed this way, or in other words, we would change to a different working method if there was sufficient traction for an alternative solution that allows for the group to switch back to pure consensus building as we did on other matters. And we also had a lot of challenging matters in front of the group before. So what we've seen in the last couple of days is a lot of discussion surrounding two proposals that have been sent to the list, one of which is a proposal introduced by Cavus, and that was to discuss a refined threshold required for the board when it makes a decision whether or not to reject GAC consensus. So the proposal was to move to a 60% threshold rather than maintaining the two-thirds threshold that we do have in our third draft report. And the other proposal was made by Becky Burr, and that was a carve-out to provide for a situation where this notion of the GAC being able to take two bites at the apple, I'm paraphrasing here, deliberately not using legal language or language of the proposal in order to meet the concerns by those that have indicated that their chartering organizations might reject the recommendation 11 proposal if it were the final outcome of the CCWG. While we also did observe that not all in this group received the proposed changes to our draft language favorably, we do think that these two proposals have been introduced with good faith and that these have been received well by many in our group. It is not yet predictable whether or not any of these proposals or a combination thereof will make it to the consensus level. But after careful and lengthy deliberations in the leadership team, we have concluded a few hours back that we should give these suggestions a chance to get further traction and possibly lead to a consensus suggestion by this group. There will be limited time to achieve that, so it is our suggestion that we start a debate on those alternative suggestions during this call today. We have allocated roughly 30 minutes to that discussion, and then we will likely need to hand over the work on this to those who are interested in this topic to conduct a dedicated special call, merely focusing on this very subject next week to see whether it can be further fleshed out, and then we would bring this back to the plenary during our next call. The reason why we are moving away from voting at this stage is that we have seen signals on the list, encouraging signals from those who have been quite firm in their rejection of the current text, and those have indicated sympathy for alternative suggestions. May it be the 60% solution, which has been which has become to known in the trade as the Clavus proposal, or the carve-out language suggested by Becky, or a combination thereof. So with that, I would like to give the opportunity to the group to speak to the procedural approach that we're suggesting to the group. And after that, you know, we shouldn't talk process for too long, but nonetheless, we should allow for feedback from the group on that, but we will really keep that brief and then move to the substantive discussion. Cavus, your hand is raised.
Good morning or good time to everybody. Do you hear me, please?
Yes, Cavus.
Yes. I am speaking not to support my proposal. I'm speaking on Becky's proposal that from the substance is a very good proposal, but it simply said that GAC advice, instead of going to the board, go to GNSO. This, I think, is a structural change. It's a change of the structure and format and process. It is new for the entire community. All of our proposal has been subject to three public comments. This one is the first time. Irrespective of the value of the proposal, of the substance, procedurally we might have difficulty that we all of a sudden change from one concept to other concept. The proposal of 60%, forget about me, is simple because the two-thirds what was objected, 50% was also objected by others. It has always been a proverb, make or divide the apple by two. So that is the situation. Does not require any procedure. It is a mathematic or arithmetic calculation. That is what I'm suggesting, that at this stage it may be difficult because we don't know the legal consequences of all these changes. We have to wait for the board, whether the board has the difficulty. We have to wait for the GAC, whether the GAC has difficulty that now its proposal going to the GNSO before going to the board. Sorry, I want to limit myself to the 5 minutes that I have proposed for the first intervention, and I finish, and I thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Kabuz, for these explanations. Let me first put on record that there have been no objections to our suggested way forward. In fact, there has been some support and sympathy for us not taking a decision on this important aspect of our set of recommendations today. So Sean, you'll be put into the you will get to speak in a moment. So I would just like to note that there was no objection to our suggested way forward. In terms of substance, Kavus, let me just put on record as well that the idea of a carve-out with respect to a particular part of the community is not unprecedented in our work, but I will let others comment on your suggestion. It would be my proposal that we speak to the 60% proposal first, see whether individuals on this call do think that the 60% proposal introduced by Kavus could bridge the gap between those that have previously objected to the recommendation and whether we could get their buy-in. There was feedback on the list suggesting that the 60% might not remove the concerns expressed with respect to the combination of recommendations 1, 10, and 11. But let's hear others on that point. And after that, I would like to ask Becky to explain both her proposal with the carve-out as well as the rationale for it so that we can all better understand what the implications are. I heard Shaw. Shaw, I think you wanted to get in the queue, so this would be your turn.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, Sean, please go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. I just wanted to make comment about the timeline. I think you just mentioned that the group will be set up to discuss this particular issue and then come back next week or something. I hope this is not going to take too much time. I think this should be closed as soon as possible. And if there can be a good progress in this current meeting, I don't see a need to actually create any special group again for this. In view of the timeline and the fact that if anything is going to happen for this transition to be feasible, if at all it is still feasible, I think the proposal to come out, at least a draft of it needs to come out early enough in this month. So prolonging this to next week and then the group coming back to the mailing list with still the same possible disagreement, I don't think it's helpful. So in view of that, I think it would be good to try to fashion out a compromise solution within the larger group as soon as possible. And to your question on the 60%, on my own individual view, I think it's a compromise that should be accepted. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Sean. Before moving back to Kavuz, let me be perfectly clear. We are offering to the group to find compromise by other means than through voting, because we think that the group really wants to have this evolutionary process and come to consensus. Let's not mistake that as a suggestion to give more time to the group in terms of days or week to close this. So we are going to give more time for deliberation on this topic with an extra call or multiple extra calls, but we stand by the overall suggested time frame that Mathieu will speak to later during this call. So there is still a sense of urgency. We need to crunch, as Keith said, in order to make this happen. We think the hope of consensus justifies that we give this an extra opportunity, but we do not plan to expand the time span to get our report finalized because of that. And I think that you should all take this as an opportunity to reach compromise, but also as an encouragement not to rehearse arguments that have previously been made, but to actually move out of corners that you might have been in before, using the analogy that that Robin has been using in the chat a while ago, and work constructively on ways forward rather than looking at the positions that are already known for quite some time. So thank you for that. Kavuz, your hand is now lowered. Did you want to speak?
No, I give it to the others. I have spoken once. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kavuz. Let me ask whether there are further comments on the proposal introduced by Kavuz. I would be particularly interested in expressions of support for this as a standalone solution to bridging the gap between the different views. And also, I would like to hear objections from those who think that even a lowering of the threshold might not be sufficient in order to make their chartering organizations approve the recommendation. So let me refresh your memory on a note sent to the list by Becky, who said that she thinks that 60% alone might not do the trick. But let's please hear more views on that. We need to know whether 60%, which is obviously the simplest alternative solution that we have, has a chance of succeeding, or whether we need to move on to another proposal that might help reconcile the differences. James.
Hi, thanks, Thomas. James speaking, and just wanted to weigh in from the perspective of registrars, who have been having some discussions relative to the two-thirds threshold. The 60% threshold, I think, was intriguing to some registrars, and I think that if we had more time, we could perhaps discuss it a bit further, and I could maybe see that approach gaining traction. So I am encouraged by the potential to have more time. I don't want to presume that it will ultimately lead to registrars and then perhaps, you know, the broader GNSO softening its opposition to the threshold or becoming the compromise that we want it to be. But I think it's a step in the right direction, and more time will definitely help. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Malcolm?
Thank you, Thomas. We need a compromise that addresses the reasons why people are concerned. One of the problems with the two-thirds rule is this notion of two bites at the cherry, and Becky's proposal attempts to address that. But one of the problems, one of the other problems with this two-thirds rule is the sense that it creates a presumption that the board must follow GAC advice except in extraordinary circumstances and doesn't treat it even-handedly. And neither the 60% rule nor Becky's proposal directly address that. So I think an extra week, we could come up with some language that would seek to compromise on that point and to clarify that point. So I welcome the week and hope that we can build a compromise that everyone can live with.
Malcolm, let me ask a follow-up question. Do you have concrete language for capturing the spirit or the idea of that proposal that you mentioned?
The problem or the solution?
A solution. So I would like to add to the notes a suggested component that you're offering to resolve this.
Okay. Looking for language that affirms that a change in the supermajority does not create a presumption that the board ought to accept GAC advice in all except extraordinary circumstances.
Thank you very much, Malcolm.
Thank you.
Ivat, send it up. Ivat.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you all right.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. As I have written in the chat, I will object to anything that has to third 60% is fine. 60% plus Becky's proposal is even better. And I do not agree with what Malcolm just said. The GAC most certainly has, I think, a right to expect the board to, in principle, follow its consensus advice. If and rejections must be then first steps must be taken to reconcile, and then rejection can be by whatever thresholds we decide. 60% would be fine with me.
Thank you very much, Eberhard. I think we need to get further clarity on the Malcolm suggestion. I did not hear Malcolm stating that we would deviate from the current practice whereby it is the ultimate or the board's ultimate decision to adhere to or to reject GAC advice. Malcolm, would you like to speak to that and explain more? Because I think we need to be ensure that there is no misunderstanding of the suggested component of a solution that you're offering.
At the moment, the board's responsibility is to consider all the advice that it receives, to consider all the inputs from all parts of the community, and to determine the position. I'm simply seeking to ensure that we continue that the board continues to have a duty to consider all inputs rather than a presumption that the GAC advice must be followed in almost all circumstances. So I'm simply seeking to continue the current criteria by which the board evaluates GAC advice, and for that matter, everybody else's advice.
Okay, thank you very much, Malcolm. Any further comments on the 60% proposal? Ivad.
I just posted this in the chat. Can we be precise on the language? GAC advice is only special if it is consensus advice. Isn't it?
I guess that would depend on your definition of special, but what we have now is the GAC can issue advice whether there is consensus in the GAC or not to the ICANN board. So there is no threshold for advice to be allowed for. But we are discussing the board's reaction to GAC advice,
And only if there is GAC consensus advice to the board, then the formal process of discussing a mutually acceptable solution is triggered, and ultimately the GAC's advice can be rejected with a threshold inside the board that we're currently discussing. So the only, and I guess that you mean special advice by GAC consensus advice would trigger this process. Does that answer the question, Ebert?
I was just, it wasn't a question. You just used five sentences to explain my one word, but I think we are in agreement.
Let's put that on record, that we're in agreement on this one. Thank you so much, Ebert. So with that, there don't seem to be more comments on the 60% suggestion. We have heard and read some concerns that in isolation 60% might not resolve the issues, but that it is perceived as a step forward or a part of a potential solution. Let's now move to the Becky proposal. And I would like to invite Becky to speak to this briefly so that everyone is on the same page with respect to the rationale and the consequences thereof.
Thank you, Thomas. So first of all, I just want to say the point of my proposal is really to try to address the issues that people cite when they are talking about the combination of recommendation 1, 10, and 11. And actually doesn't really involve any changes to recommendation 11 itself, but the notion is that, when there is a discussion about an exercise of the community power that is designed to challenge the board's implementation of GAC advice, since the GAC would have, whether it's 66% or 60%, since GAC advice would be subject to this extraordinary, higher rejection requirement, that in order to avoid in order to really permit the community to ensure that there are challenges to board implementation that exceeds mission or violates bylaws, the GAC would not participate in a decision-making way in the decision to escalate and challenge GAC advice in that manner. So obviously the GAC would continue to participate as a discussant, provide advice, whatever. But to the extent that the GAC sought a decision-making role, it would not exercise that in the context of a community decision to use a community power to challenge the board's implementation of GAC advice. So that would mean that we would need to adjust the thresholds to ensure to ensure that each of the issues were properly addressed. I think in the case of the IRP, where I think this comes up most quickly or most clearly, the GAC would not count as one of the two SOs or ACs objecting to the exercise of community power. But as I said, I want to make sure that it really everybody understands it does not actually change the language of recommendation 11, but it addresses the sort of combination of authority or extra consideration change of status that you get when you combine recommendation 1, 10, 11, and the GAC acting in a decision-making role.
Thanks very much, Becky. Are there any questions for Becky on this? Okay, so we can assume that Becky's proposal is well understood. Let me now ask those who think that the Becky proposal could do the trick and those who think that it is not sufficient to speak up so that we can either proceed with this proposal standalone or discuss variations thereof. Cavus.
I'm sorry, once again, this is a complex proposal. It may be good proposal to resolve not only recommendation 1, but also recommendation 11, both together. But it must be discussed, whether in a full group or in another group. We cannot decide on that. It is not as simple as 60%. It is a complex. We have to see whether it requires any structural changes, whether it requires any process changes, and so on and so forth. We need to discuss that. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Cavus. Any further comments on this? I've seen, so there are hands raising, and Jorge from the Swiss government had suggested to close this today. I would be interested in hearing from you, Jorge, on the basis of what proposed alternative you think we can close today. If so, I'm all for it, but it is my understanding that the individuals on this group need to take back the suggested variations or additional suggestions to their respective groups. And I think one thing we all need to take to heart, and that is that once we've been working on and agree on a revised version of Recommendation 11, that needs to be it. So we can't afford to have an additional feedback loop after we have reached consensus on this one. Brett?
Thank you, Matthew. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can
hear you.
Can you
hear me, Brett? Okay, good. I just wanted to say I'm not exactly certain about the details of Becky's proposal. I'd like to see them developed and laid out in text over the next week or so, as many people have suggested in the chat. However, I will say that I do think that this is the only reasonable way forward to address all of the concerns that have been raised by a number of people in regards to the interplay between Recommendation 1 and Recommendation 11. And I think that this is a very positive development. We'll see where this ends up, but I do think that this is the most likely path toward resolution if there is to be one. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Brett, and thanks for indicating that there is room for compromise. That's excellent. Andrew?
Thank you. I don't well, okay, let me put this another way. I, for official purposes, I don't have an opinion about how to do this because I don't, you know, I'm not a member, I don't have a vote or anything like that. But I'm trying to understand which direction this is going. I just heard Ruth suggesting that Becky's proposal needs to be completely laid out and we need to discuss it and so on. We initially were talking about the next few days for a decision in a week, and people keep drifting across that threshold into to discuss it over the next week. And I'm trying to understand how this decision comes to an end. I really think it's important, and I think it's valuable that people want to work towards a compromise that and a consensus position that everybody can embrace. I really, you know, I congratulate everybody for being willing to do that. But I'm also looking at the calendar, and so I'm trying to understand whether, for instance, what Cavus is saying is that we need to discuss this over a long period and have three readings and all the rest of it, or 'cause if that's what the option is, then Becky's proposal is off the table. There's no way to, we don't have the time to do it. And I just want, I would like some firm guidance to come out of this call of exactly how this is going to proceed and when the drop-dead position is on closing this and just working with the members, because we don't have any more time. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Andrew. And I sympathize with that request for clarity. There are more individuals adding themselves to the queue, which I'd like to close after Eberhard. But our suggested way forward is, as previously stated, we're not going to extend the time span towards finalizing our supplemental report with this. So we will host dedicated meetings for a sub-team, and the sub-team can be the same in size as this plenary group. We will offer to host a meeting on Thursday and another meeting on Monday. Whether it's needed or not, we can then determine. And deadline for submission of a alternative proposal that that reaches or potentially reaches group consensus needs to be submitted by 23:59 UTC on Monday. And in the absence of a viable proposal on the table by then, we will then go back to voting. Suzanne.
Thank you, Thomas. And I don't mean to take too much time. I hope, can I be heard?
Yes, we can hear you.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to clarify, I've gotten some guidance from GAC colleagues earlier today, and I just wanted to share that. I think I'm in the same boat as Alice and Parr. We feel obliged to just indicate today, and I think you've taken the poll off the table today, which is very helpful to us, that to date we have no GAC position other than the January 25 comments. So very heartened by the ideas that are circulating and some proposals to look at for a compromise solution, but that I'm not in a position as an official GAC representative to share a GAC view at the moment. So I just wanted to put that marker down, but certainly also wanted to support the ideas, the very constructive ideas that are now in circulation. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Suzanne. Izumi? Izumi, if you're speaking, we can't hear you. So I understand that there is an audio issue with Izumi. Eberhard has lowered his hand. So Eberhard, if that was deliberately, then everything's okay. If you wanted to speak, give me an indication and we'll get in the queue. And while Izumi is trying to get on the audio, let me just clarify that we are not establishing another sub-team. You know, when I said that this is a sub-group call, then it's rather a single-purpose call or one-topic call that we're having to allow for those that want to discuss this to meet and further flesh out a solution. So there's no new group being formed. It's just a forum for discussing this very topic. Izumi, I suggest that we get back to you once your audio is fixed. And I hope that everybody has taken good note of the proposed way forward. Two meetings, Thursday and Monday. Submission deadline for a new consensus proposal, 23:59 on next Monday, UTC that is. Great. And with that, I think we can move to the next agenda item, and that's going to be chaired by Mathieu.
Thank you very much, Thomas. This is Mathieu Vey, the CCNSO appointed co-chair of the CCWG, and we are moving on with our agenda, which is filled with items that we are trying to close as we proceed towards a supplemental draft. And the first set of items was related to the CWG stewardship feedbacks. We have already discussed ways to refine the budget process, as well as address the concerns raised by CWG in the separation process, in the especially the separation process, as well as the scope of the IRP and the issue raised by Avery about the PTI and how the PTI decisions would be in the scope of the IRP. So this has led to some proposals back and forth with the CWG, and I think we can, I don't know if we've got a summary of these ready, and I think Grace, you're volunteering for a quick summary of the CWG discussions on that, or was that for something else?
That was for something else, Mathieu, for the AOB.
So it's our understanding that regarding the budget, we have cleared the discussions through a subgroup of Jonathan Zuck, Jordan Carter, and Chuck Gomez on ensuring that the timing issues were taken into account for the IANA budget. And there is going to be a requirement that we keep cooperating in implementation with the CWG as they draft the process for the IANA budget elaboration and approval. So that was something that apparently was consistent. It was not a structural change of any kind. The separation process, I think, was not a contentious one. And on the IRP and PTI, two options were being considered. One was to ensure that the bylaws of ICANN would mention that PTI, that ICANN is also responsible of ensuring PTI complies with its own bylaws, as And the second option was to elaborate a little bit of specific standards of review that are related to this PTI processes so that an affected party can use the IRP as an appeal mechanism in case of if the PTI does not follow its the rules as described with the CWG. And on that aspect as well, we would have some form of checkpoints to organize with the CWG during the implementation phase to ensure we are still in line. So basically, our assessment was that we could address this with these checkpoints in implementation. And I'm not sure whether we have the CWG co-chairs. I'm seeing Jonathan in the room and Lisa. And if you want Jonathan and Lisa to comment on this short summary or add something at this point? No. So, unless there's any concern on this, I think what our next steps will be sending out the final versions of these recommendations to lawyers as well as the group for final confirmation and closing them in the next few days as we are closing our other items one by one these few days. Any concern about this approach? I'm seeing none, so I think it's a good step to report that we are now clear on all the CWG concerns and the CWG dependencies. And that's I want to thank Lisa, Jonathan, and all the CWG members who got involved in this discussion for their reactivity and the ability to find constructive solutions to the interactions of our groups. And I'm now moving to the next agenda item, which is the AOC reviews. That's recommendation number 9. And I will turn to Steve Del Bianco for a quick update of the discussion so far. We left it last week with a proposal to get back to the board. There's been a back and forth exchange. And Steve, can you please summarize for us the type of discussion to close that we have to make today? Thank you.
Glad to, Matthew. Steve Del Bianco here, and it would be, I think, better if staff were able to display in the Adobe. Okay, you've got recommendation 9 there. That's great. What we're trying to discuss here is on second reading for Annex 9, and that's the AOC reviews, which are being brought into the bylaws as a result of Stress Test 14. The second reading for this was distributed to the list on the 27th of January, and that's what you're looking at now in Adobe. On pages 1 through 3 of that document, we show our replies, the concerns that the board raised in an email that the board sent to CCWG on the 26th of January. And the board's concerns related specifically to the review team size and composition, to the working methods we had recommended in the proposal, and to the timing of the reviews. Now, Annex 9 has size and composition, the document you have in Adobe, in paragraph 54, if any of you need to refresh your memory on it. And the working methods were in paragraph 57. So we're really only talking about a couple of areas in there. And the timing of reviews, well, that's in each of the 4 individual AOC-required reviews. And the timing in each case is the same. We had recommended in the CCWG that the timing of review be no less frequently than every 5 years. So you couldn't go more than 5 years between, say, ATRT reviews, the reviews of SSR, security, stability, and resiliency, but you could do it more frequently if the case was needed. Now, on the 1st of February, yesterday, Rinalia for the Board of Directors replied to our replies in an email. And I think to make life easier for you, I'll put the link to that board email into the chat. So if anybody wanted to refresh their memory on the Rinalia's board reply, I put the Piper Mail link in the chat. And what it consists of is a different color, blue, where the board replied to the replies that we had given back to the board. And frankly, this exchange between the board and CCWG, it suggests that we're really talking past each other on this topic, because we had replied specifically that CCWG wasn't proposing, just to give you an example, we're not proposing fixed size of the review team. Our recommendation said up to 21 members of a review team. And that's not a fixed size, it's a maximum size. Well, the board came back once again yesterday and said, well, we don't recommend specifying a fixed number. So that's why I feel as if we're talking past each other a little bit. One other example. We replied that we're recommending the reviews occur at least every 5 years, and that leaves flexibility. And then we noted that the AOC required the reviews every 3 years. Not every 5. So we created some room in there to relax the review schedule that we've been on since the AOC was signed. But in the board's February 1st reply, the board said there should be flexibility and predictability, but would not support any minimum frequency for the reviews. So that's what I mean by talking past each other. We will do a reply, and the board's coming back with basically restating their original concern. And I don't think it would be productive for us on this call to do another round of reply to the board. A reply to the board's reply to our reply. Instead, I'd love to put a question to you all tonight. Let's look at what the board is really asking for and determine if the CCWG participants tonight are willing to accept. Now, the board and staff want to compile and maintain what they call operational standards for the review team size, the review team composition, the working methods, and the timing of reviews, and not have those parameters be reflected in the bylaws at all. And that would mean that paragraphs 54, 57, and the timing sentences, just really 3 paragraphs, would have to be taken from the bylaws and left to the determination of operational standards. Now, the board is suggesting that the operational standards would reflect the lessons learned and would be more easily updated compared to changing a standard bylaw. And the CCWG had made recommendations that these parameters be standard bylaws. Now, as an example, the board notes that it and staff are in the process of compiling operational standards for organizational or structural reviews that are already required in the bylaws. And many of you know you've been through this required review of the GNSO, ALAC, CCNSO. Those structural reviews are undergoing an operational standard. We just haven't seen it yet. Now, the board proposes having that operational standard for organizational reviews also be used for the AOC reviews. Now, I just will note that the organizational reviews are reviews of ICANN's internal ACs and SOs, and they're managed by the board and the staff who select an outside expert, a consulting firm usually, to do the review. Now, on the other hand, I want to give you a contrast. The AOC reviews are reviews of ICANN, including the corporation's performance. And those reviews in the AOC are managed by the community. So the board and staff, is it really appropriate for the board and staff to maintain operational standards for review of ICANN's board and staff? So here's the question. We want CCWG to consider taking the parameters on timing and size and composition and working methods, taking them out of our recommended bylaws, and instead to let them become operational standards determined by ICANN. And to do that, I would ask board members on the call to try to help us understand more about operational standards, because we're not familiar with it within the context of ICANN, and certainly not within the context of ICANN reviews. For instance, three quick questions, and I'll paste them into the chat. Would the community have input on developing and approving the initial operational standards? Would the CCWG proposals, as written in Annex 9, would they become the starting point for the operational standards? And the key question, what would be the process for revising and approving changes to operational standards later on? So I'll paste those questions into the chat, and I hope the board members can speak to those to give us all a better understanding on your desire to move these things from bylaws to operational standards. Thank you. Back to you, Matthew.
Thank you very much, Steve. And indeed, I don't know. I think I haven't seen Rinalia in the room, in the AC room at least. But I think before turning to Alan, I would just like to check from the board whether there's any. Okay, Sam is stating that the board has a conflict and no board members could attend this meeting. We can take back the request for clarification. This is too late for that. This is at least our third reading. I think we need to make to define a way forward. And I'm actually very puzzled by the fact that we are still going into lengthy, detailed discussions on basically implementation questions at this late stage after three public comments on the incorporation of the affirmation of commitments. So we still have so much to do. We don't have to actually add to our workload in a very short time frame a discussion that does not seem to me to be creating a lot of issues with the overall community. But I'd like to hear Alan and Jordan first. Alan?
Thank you very much. Sam's comment notwithstanding, Bruce, I think, still is a board member and is on this call. So you might want to defer to him. Couple of very quick comments, and I won't spend a lot of time. Steve made said something about the AOC reviews are managed by the community as opposed to an external consultant brought in. Last time I checked, they're not managed by the community. They're conducted by the community, but that's a very different thing. I tend to support the board's recommendations. The periodic reviews that we right now have for ACs and SOs are described in the bylaws in three paragraphs. The rest is implementation. I honestly believe that we should be doing something similar with the AOC reviews. We should mandate them and the details should not be cast in bylaws so that to change them requires perhaps unmanageable things that have to be done. So I understand it's late now, but I do support the concept that the details of how the reviews are handled and the details of how the people are selected not be cast in concrete in the bylaws. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. I would say that this point of the board concerns was actually taken into account, and we have definitely made a reference to a number of implementation and operational standards in the recommendation right now. It's only a limited number of items that would be put into the bylaw and not the full operational details. Jordan, you're next.
Thanks, Matthew. Can you hear me?
Yes, very well.
Great. Thanks. Hi, everyone. It's Jordan here. I'm .NZ, Work Party One Rapporteur. I generally support the bylaws being as thin as possible, as little detail as required there, and the filling out the detail of how we will operate being done in various other documents. But we are 3 minutes past midnight in this process. We have run out of time, and we've put up numerous drafts of this proposal where we've made a key commitment being that we'll translate the AOC, including the reviews that are set out in it, into the bylaws. And the issue that I've got now is that it just doesn't matter in substance whether these are in the bylaws or not. As we all know, these aren't going to be fundamental bylaws in our proposal. We can change these details if required, and the board can put up bylaws amendments if required. But only the bare basics of this, in a very permissive and sensible way, are being put in that guarantee there'll be wide community participation, and that guarantee that the reviews will at least happen every half decade, which, as we all know, in internet time is quite a long time. So the idea that we would say, after this, at this late point, after three drafts that said something else, oh, by the way, these core reviews of accountability and transparency, no, we're not going to put them in the binding bylaws. We'll put them in operational policy documents that could be changed by the body that's being reviewed. It just doesn't seem to me to be sustainable. Even though intellectually I think that's probably where they belong, I just think this is another change, another complexity, another last-minute diversion that we shouldn't go down. And the fact that none of the board members would come on this call to explain it is a scheduling fault that cannot be rectified and is unfortunate. But even if they were speaking for it, my view is firmly that adding another change like this will just make it harder to get this proposal through Congress, harder to explain to our SOs and ACs why we've changed yet another thing at this point. And I think we should just go with where we were in the third draft proposal. We're not trying to add extra changes and have a glorious sort of massive rewrite at this point. And no one has convinced me that we should change this. Thank you.
Thank you, Jordan. And just to make clear, before turning back to Steve, and maybe you're going to make the same point, Steve, we are not making all the operational details in the bylaws. We are only putting some key requirements such as maximum size of the teams, frequency of the reviews in the bylaws, and that's standard bylaws that the board can change if they want to, subject to potential community veto with the thresholds that we know. And the rest, we have totally taken into account the board's comments that were suggesting that things about the operational details. Steve.
Thanks, Matthew. You're right. I was going to recap how limited the number of paragraphs are in our recommendation for team size, composition, frequency, and a working method. And I think that Jordan's right. We do have to keep in mind that the reviews themselves include reviews of the board and staff. So I wouldn't call it a conflict of interest, but there's certainly a concern that the board and staff not be able to unilaterally change the operational standards for reviews that are conducted by the community that involve the corporation itself. I think that in the chat, Sam, speaking for ICANN Legal, had a good point that they may start with our recommendations on these operational standards, but there would need to be a way for the community to have input, if not approval. And we'd look forward to detail on that. And then finally, the board did note in public comments that it wanted to provide operational standards. That's been on the table for several weeks and was even noted in our third draft. So operational standards, the way we understood it, was going to be the actual operational details on how review teams would conduct their business, how they'd interact with the expert, whether participants and observers and members would be available in review teams. Items like that, which were not in our proposal, we assumed would be operational standards, and we would look forward to staff giving us a publication of that eventually through implementation. But it's really only since Rinalia sent us the board's note yesterday that I think the board has made it abundantly clear that even the paragraph on timing and composition shouldn't, in their opinion, even be in the bylaws at all, that those should be completely left to operational standards. And I'll confess, this is the first time I'd realized that that's what the board is asking for, since the board had been giving us email replies indicating they didn't think that it should be a fixed number of the team. Well, we kept replying, we don't have a fixed number. We just have a maximum, and the number's allowed to be lower. But now we know that the board wishes to move everything in those categories to operational standards. And that begs the question of what is an operational standard in the ICANN context? How is it created, and how is it reviewed? If the board wants to provide more detail on that, that might be a way forward on this. But I don't think we have to suggest that it's all very last minute, since the board has asked for this angle for several weeks. It just hadn't revealed the degree to which they wanted to move things out of our proposal for the bylaw. Thanks, Matthew.
Thank you, Steve. Avery, and then we'll conclude. Avery.
Thank you. Avery speaking. I just wanted to add my voice to those who say that we should leave them as they are in the bylaws. We have to remember what we're doing here. We're replacing the AOC. The AOC has no change matters, no change procedure. It is indeed something that's in concrete. We are moving into the bylaws that are mutable. I think that in principle, one can agree that bylaws should be minimal and things should be moved into operational procedures. I think that we could spend the next couple years working out those operational procedures. And when that is done, when it's been done with the community and it's gone through all of its cycles, we could certainly point the bylaws get the bylaws altered to point to those. We have certainly done that in other cases. We did that in the GNSO, where at one time all the details of PDPs were in the bylaws. And then once we had worked out a separate set of guidelines and of procedures, operating procedures, the bylaws were changed to refer to those. So while in principle it's a good idea, it's not something that needs to be done now. We need to remember that what we're doing is, in order to cancel the AOC with bilateral agreement, we are putting these in our bylaws. So we're taking them from concrete to something very solid but mutable. At the moment, they're quittable, but they're not mutable. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Avery. Kavusa had closed the queue, but it's your first intervention on this topic. I'm sure you'll be concise because you're aware of our time constraints. Kavus?
Yes, I will. I think I have real difficulty to see the operational things which changes quickly with the time put in the bylaw. Operational things I put in the chat could be published, the public comments and so on and so forth, but not put in the bylaw, even the minimal one. We should not tie up the hand of the board. We should not take all maneuvering assets on the board. Thank you.
Thank you, Kavus. So what I'm taking away from this conversation is first of all, there's some form of confusion about what we're trying to do. We are trying to put some key minimal frameworks in the bylaws for the AOC, and that's actually giving the board and the community a lot more flexibility than today, because it's standard bylaws, and standard bylaws can be changed pretty easily, actually much more easily than the AOC itself. And the minimal framework in the bylaws has been in our proposal for a while. I haven't heard any significant, substantial reason for not putting such a thing in the bylaws in our discussion. And so I think the safest way forward is to keep our recommendation as is. I would put an action item for Steve or the co-chairs to reach out to Rinalia and have a discussion about it, because I think a lot of it is a bit of a misunderstanding about what we're trying to do and how we've actually taken into account some of the board comment. And I think with that we will be able to say that our recommendation 11 can go into final drafting mode. And we'll address any last-minute thing if need be, but I'm confident we won't have to. So both staff will finalize drafting, and we are going to reach out to Rinalia to ensure we're clearing any misunderstanding. And with that, I'm turning to Thomas for the next agenda item.
Thank you very much, Mathieu. And we're now going to move to another discussion on the mission. And the document is going to be brought up in the remote participation room, I guess, momentarily. This is a multifaceted discussion, as you know, and I would like to hand over to Becky to give us a quick recap on where we are, because actually we've made good progress on recommendation 5, and there are only a few items left to be fleshed out and agreed on at this stage. Becky, over to you.
Thanks. As the document reflects, we have agreed on consumer trust to keep the language of the third draft proposal. With respect to the discussion that we had about the words where feasible and appropriate in core value 4, where feasible and appropriate depending on market mechanisms for competition purposes. We have agreed to reinsert that text. And at this point, it looks like we have a general agreement in the, to the extent that there's been discussion about some language in the text of the report. The current state of the language is listed there, while acknowledging that ICANN is non-antitrust authority. On balance, the CCWG elected to retain the introductory language to ensure that ICANN continues to have the authority, for example, to refer competition-related questions regarding new registry services to appropriate authorities under the RCEP program and to establish bottom-up policies for allocating top-level domains. So I think we are getting there on that particular language. We're still waiting final input on the language in the mission statement with respect to the numbers work and the root server text. I understand we're getting close on that. We continue to have an open discussion about how issues regarding the scope of ICANN's agreements with contracted parties are dealt with in the bylaws. Currently, we have language that specifies that ICANN shall not impose regulations on services that use the Internet's unique identifiers or the content that such services carrier provide, along with language that says ICANN shall have the ability to negotiate, enter in, and enforce agreements with contracted parties in service of its mission. Our lawyers have advised us that it might be best to have a sort of general statement of principles and defer to interpretation on this approach. The board has suggested that although in concept they agree that ICANN is not a regulator, they would suggest that the lawyer should be instructed to draft language regarding the contracts in another part of ICANN bylaws. And there are serious concerns that have been raised regarding creation of third-party beneficiaries for commercial agreements between ICANN and each registry operator and registrar. So those contracting and regulatory language are still out there to be discussed. On grandfathering, I'm taking a little bit of liberty to propose in response to our discussion last night or last week that we provide some language to clarify that grandfathering, any grandfathering, would be for the avoidance of doubt. It should not create any expectation or implication that anything about the existing registrar agreements, accreditation agreements or registry agreements are, in fact, outside of the scope of mission, but really this is to resolve all doubts on that question. I'm suggesting that we clarify in response to the questions that the attorneys have asked us that the grandfather terms and conditions, including PICs, can be renewed until the expiration date of any such contract following ICANN's approval of a new substitute form of registry agreement or registrar accreditation agreement. So, all contracts for new GTLDs that haven't been signed yet can be signed up. The existing agreements can be re-signed, renewed, and at some point, as ICANN does in the ordinary course, if it replaces the registry agreements or the registrar accreditation agreements, then at that point, renewal would not be appropriate. So that's where we are, assuming that we can reach closure on the proposed approach on grandfathering. I think we then are just left with the significant issue regarding whether this regulatory prohibition belongs in a different part of the ICANN bylaws.
Thanks very much, Becky. I suggest that we go through the open items one by one to have a structured discussion on those. I guess the first two points do not need any further discussion by this group. On the third point, with respect to board input, we have Bruce on the call, so I would like to offer an opportunity to Bruce to speak to that. Bruce, would the board like to offer any feedback on point number three? Okay, so Bruce can't speak. Sorry, I had missed that piece of information earlier. Bruce, can you maybe give an indication on where we stand in the chat? Okay, so board liaison is still working with RSEC on this. Sam, is there an expected delivery date for feedback? I think we need to get some clarity on when we can make progress with this. We need to close this. So for those who are on audio only, Bruce can't speak. And I was asking whether he could update us on a deadline or when we can expect feedback. So So I understand Bruce is in a predicament that he needs to discuss new GTLDs at the moment, and he's trying to multitask. Let me say that as we move on in this critical phase of our work, that we would very much appreciate at least a heads up if board participation is not possible, because it's difficult to close if we can't for sure note that there will be no issues with the board. So let me then put on record picking up a suggestion from Jordan that we will note Monday 23:59 as a expected delivery time for the board's feedback on this so that we can proceed on the Tuesday call. Thank you very much. Let's move to the fourth item then. I know that Alan's hand has been raised for a moment. So, Alan, would you like to speak to that point, I hope, or do you have other
issues? I'll wait till we get to the market mechanisms item.
Thanks very much. Any comments on the fourth point with respect to contract language? Greg.
Thanks, Greg Chatton, for the record. And item D there about considering concerns about third-party beneficiaries. This is the first I've heard of this in a word search in emails, which of course is, you know, crude type of searching, did not reveal any discussion of this. And I've probably been as assiduous a reader of emails on our list as anybody, sadly. So I'm not sure what these concerns are, or why they're being expressed as being serious, as opposed to all of our, other concerns. In any case, I'm not sure. I see the point, or why if we want to consider them, I guess we need to discuss it. But at this point, I'm not sure how that, theoretically coming about here, and what the concern is. So I'm not sure, what one would do about it in this case. But I think if we are going to have a discussion about it, it's something we, need to deal with. I think, freedom of contract is obviously something I'm, all in favor of. I'm not sure I see exactly the nexus between that and language here and the third-party beneficiary issue, which is a, fairly, technical, although not unimportant, legal issue. I don't think, I don't want to beat a dead horse. It's just something I don't think, that's now sitting here. And if it's going to sit here, it has to be resolved somehow. I'm just not sure what their resolution is of it. Or what the concern exactly is. I'm happy to discuss it offline with Becky. I'm not even sure that we disagree about it, but just seems if we're going to raise, if we have open issues here that we're trying to close, and this one sitting here, technically as an open issue, we have to figure out how to close it. So, hopefully we're not talking about changing anything from our very, very negotiated language in 4A and B at this point. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. So I would like to turn to Becky to see whether this is something that we can maybe resolve in the next few minutes. It looks like this needs further discussion on the list, but Becky, maybe you can briefly speak to that.
No, I wasn't proposing any change. I was just saying, as part of the entire contracting discussion and entire contracting regulatory discussion, that is one of the things that is in the mix with respect to this issue. I am not proposing any changes to the language in 4B, but I would note that the ICANN board has taken serious exception to having the language in 4B in the mission statement. And so really, when it gets right down to it, I think the particular issue that is open is where the language in 4B, where that concept goes in the bylaws.
Becky, there is a suggestion from Malcolm in the chat, easy to close, just include a clause saying that this does not create any rights in those contracts for third parties. Can you comment on that?
I don't disagree that it's easy to close in that way.
So can we then close on that?
Well, I just don't, I mean, I don't, I think that this is part of the, we need to have the conversation about where we put all of this contract language and the language regarding the prohibition on regulation, whether we're accepting the board's proposal or the board's comments on this, which we discussed at some point, the board felt that strongly that it was not appropriate to have this level of detailed language that's in the notes in the bylaws, and suggested that there be a more general contracting language in the bylaws. It was on this point that the board said, on the specific point of the regulation language, that the board said that its concerns could rise to the level of public interest concerns. So, I don't think that we have closed off on how we are responding to the board's concerns on this particular issue, and it is in particular the regulatory language.
Okay, Becky, I think you misspoke at the beginning of your intervention. It is my understanding the board is not against having this in the bylaws, which you suggested, but it is suggesting that we move this out of the mission and have another section in the bylaws related to agreements with contracted parties. And let me just ask whether there's any objection to doing so. I mean, it might help cleaning up the bylaws, making them more readable. Can we maybe conclude by accepting that suggestion, which is in 4E?
Can I just add one issue with that? I do think it makes things a little bit complicated to create a new section with the contracting language. So, and the reason I'm going to say that is for the reason that Anne has put into the chat as well. ICANN may, in service of its mission, enter into contracts. That is language that is important to a number of communities here. And I think that, what we have sort of balanced out is the ICANN has the ability to negotiate, enter into, and enforce agreements with contracting parties in service of its mission. And on the other side of the balance, the language that ICANN shall not impose regulations on services that use the Internet's unique identifier. So I think that we maybe could agree that we want to put this in a different section, but we need to keep in mind that that it's pretty clear that this has to be characterized in a way that talks about ICANN's ability to enter into and enforce agreements as part of ICANN's appropriate scope of activities.
Okay, thank you for that. It looks like Malcolm and Greg want to continue conversation on...
And my hand is up for this section also, Thomas.
For this one? Okay. Let me just explicitly ask those who object to making this formal change on putting this aspect into another part of the bylaws, whether there's any issue with that. Can you please use the red tick boxes in the Adobe so that we can...
So, Thomas, can you please clarify which bit are you talking about moving, A or B? Or both?
Well, I think that people are talking about moving both.
No. A is an explicit limitation on the mission, so we can't be talking about moving A. B is a...
I'm sorry, I agree. Not A. B or... Oh, I'm sorry. A... No, I think that what the board has said is move A. I think that what I was saying, and I think that Greg is saying this, is that A and B are sort of a pair that are intended to balance each other and need to appear together.
So that would be an argument for not removing them then, as opposed to... I think we need to be clear about what the question is before we put it.
I suggest that since there seems to be further comments on that, let's move through the queue, which I'm going to close after Greg first, and then see whether we can do a straw poll on this. Ellen.
Thank you very much. I don't have a particular opinion on whether we move things or not. I don't much care. I am worried, however, that this whole section has been one that's been hanging on for a very long time. We don't seem to be making a lot of progress on it. And again, like the recommendation 11, we really need to have closure on it pretty soon. The board has made some strong statements about what they want to see and don't want to see and where. Our lawyers have said the kind of things we were suggesting are probably not possible, but somehow we need a plan so we come to closure in the next few days. Thank you.
I agree that we need to come to closure, and this is our attempt to do so. So let's hear Malcolm now and then Greg.
Okay, I don't mind whether we move B around. I do believe that A mustn't be moved away. It's clearly intended as an explicit limit on the mission and shouldn't be moved away from the mission. But in terms of resolving this, surely the advice from the lawyers is the correct way forward. They've said draft the general principles in the governing documents and accept that there will be a mechanism for interpreting them. Well, we have the general principles. A, B, C, D, E are our general principles. Aren't we done?
Thanks, Malcolm. Greg?
Thanks, Greg Chatton again. As the X indicates, I am not in favor of separating B from A. To do so, you know, renders B just kind of a random statement, almost goes without saying. It's kind of just sitting there without context. It's really there in context and contrast to A. So I think we've almost closed this in a sense. If we just leave A and B as they are not perfect. I think it should say that there's a responsibility to enforce agreements, not merely an ability. I'm choking that, and some people in my constituency are choking me for choking that back. This is a balanced, maybe finally balanced, thing we've got here. And I also agree with Malcolm. This is at the level of general principles. I'm not sure what more to be more general than this. So I think we close this. Closing this down and moving on is the best thing we can do. If we reopen it, there's all kinds of little threads that can start getting pulled, and then we end up losing our sweater and going back to yarn. Thanks.
Thanks very much. Any further comments on item number 4? It pretty much looks like the group wishes to leave what we have in 4 as it is.
And I would like to give those who are against keeping it as it is to indicate this. So it looks like this group is leaning towards keeping what we have and not move the section elsewhere. That would be our result for this discussion. I note that Alan wanted to speak to the market mechanism issue. Just to be perfectly clear on that one, we have concluded on the market mechanism discussion that we reintroduce where feasible and appropriate, as suggested by Alan. So, Alan, is there any further need to comment?
Yes, there is. In looking at that and putting forth our arguments for it, another problem turned up that I really believe we need to address. It's a very easy one to address. It is in core value, what is now core value 5 on page 18. Let me scroll to it so I can use the exact words.
Alan, before you proceed, can we note that this will be the last item that you're going to bring up on this?
As far as I know, yes.
We really need to close. I mean, to reopen and reopen. You've made a proposal. You got your wish. The group has accepted this. And now I'm seeing that we're going back to this, and this is an approach that we can't follow through.
Thomas, may I have one sentence, and then you can judge as you wish.
It's not for me to judge. I'm just asking for us to stay focused on the process and close matters and not reopen them. But please do introduce your point, Alan.
Thank you. 5 says introducing and promoting competition in registration domain domains where practicable and beneficial in the public interest as identified through bottom-up multi-stakeholder policy development process. The policy development process in terms of the bylaws is only used with respect to the GNSO and CCNSO policy development processes. ICANN regularly does things in this area that are not done through the GNSO and CCNSO. The African strategy, the Latin American strategy, which are building vehicles to generate competition within those areas, is a critical part of what ICANN does. I strongly suggest we eliminate the term policy development process. That is, we still keep that it must be done through a bottom-up multi-stakeholder process, but not a policy development process. So I'm recommending eliminating those two words. Thank you.
So I think we need to be perfectly clear on where this is. So you're talking about page 18, right-hand column, item number 5, right?
That is correct. I'm simply pointing out I believe we made a mistake in adding those words, and ICANN would be in violation of those words on a regular basis if we leave them in. I'm simply bringing that to the attention of the CCWG. Thank you.
And you can help me. Which two words would you like to delete?
Policy development.
So the section, according to your suggestion, would read, identified through the bottom-up multi-stakeholder process.
Should probably be an A bottom-up multi-stakeholder process, but yes.
So I just want to make sure that we are all discussing the same language. So number 5 would then read, introducing and promoting competition in the registration of domain names where practical and beneficial in the public interest as identified through a bottom-up multi-stakeholder process. So are there any objections to that? There's a queue forming, Becky and then Tijani.
I just want to say this language that we use, the public interest as identified through the bottom-up multi-stakeholder stakeholder policy development process is language that we worked on quite a bit, and it also appears in core value 2. I think I understand what Alan is getting at, but I just caution that we, because of concerns about this whole, large concept of, the global public interest, we have tethered it in each case to, as identified through the bottom-up multi-stakeholder policy development process, and I at least need to think about deviating from that construction.
Thanks, Tijani.
Thank you very much, Thomas. I would like to support Alan's proposal because otherwise I can be violating this text, since it is not only about policy development, and especially in ICANN, policy development is restricted to the two SOs, GNSO and CCSO. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Tijani. It looks like some of you need to take a closer look at this and assess the consequences that this might have. It is understandable. My suggested way forward is that we take note of Alan's proposal that was supported by some. So there seems to be traction for accepting that. Let's see whether it gets further support in the next 48 hours, as we previously suggested to Sebastian. If it does, we will bring it back to the plenary for confirmation. And if not, we have to accept that this is one of the suggestions that do not get sufficient traction to change the group's previous suggestion. So with that, I think we should move to the question of grandfathering, and I would like to ask whether there are any objections to proceeding as indicated in the summary and presented by Becky. Becky, your hand is conveniently raised, so over to you.
Sorry, that's an old hand, except that I will just note that Bruce has asked us not to use the word grandfathering. So as soon as I figure out what other word to use, I'll drop it into the list.
Okay, so we might get back to grandparenting then, but that's a point that can maybe be discussed offline. Let me ask again whether there are objections to the proposed approach, however we might call it ultimately. That doesn't seem to be the case, so we would then accept the proposed language on item number 5, which is currently called grandfathering, as our consensus way forward. So with that, I would like to thank Becky for her continued efforts on this and all those that have been working on this. Thanks to the whole group for a good discussion on this point, and let's then move to the next agenda item. Over to you, Mathieu.
Thank you very much, Thomas. And actually, this is a great progress that we've been making on this item. And our next agenda item is about the timeline, communication, and where we are. And I'd like to start this item by showing in your screens a little bit of a scorecard or tracker, and maybe I can turn over to Grace, who volunteered earlier, to introduce this to the group. Grace?
Thank you, Mathieu. Hi, everyone. This is Grace Abouhamed from the staff team. What we've put together here for you is just a sort of visual overview of where we're at. This is pulled from the final report page on the wiki, where we have the elaborate page that has something like 9 different columns addressing, the document at different stages, the first reading, second reading, sometimes a third reading, et cetera. And so we took that and just put it into a more visual form for you. And this way you can see where the blue lines reach the sort of the final column. That means that the document has been finalized. And in other cases, the documents are at different stages in that process. And we'll be updating this, and we can send it to the group at the end of every week, for example, or as we make more progress, maybe every 48 hours or something like that. For more detail, you can go to the final report page on the wiki. And then I've also, in an email response to Alan's request right before the call, I sent around also a table that has sort of the status in words, you know, for you if you need that, if that's easier to look at. So those are a few documents that may help you track the work.
Thank you. Thank you, Grace. And I think what this tracker is showing is that we're quickly progressing on finalizing, because obviously the last few steps here are only a few days long, and we've today made a number of progress on recommendation number 4A, 4C, as well as recommendation 5, recommendation 7, and recommendation 9. So basically what is ahead of us still is, in terms of discussions, is the discussion about the board removal liability mitigation, the waiver indemnification discussion. We are still waiting for input from Icahn Legal on that. It was on the agenda, but we haven't had any input, so it had to be pushed forward, unfortunately. It's very unfortunate. We also have recommendation 11. Do I have to go back to that item now? I'm not sure. And that's an extra, the extra summary of where we are. And apart from that, I think most of the key substance-based discussions are closed now. Mission is almost closed. Maybe there's still a little bit to refine on mission, as discussed earlier. And then it's recommendation 11. So we're almost there. And Andrew, no, I don't have any indication about expected delivery date from Icahn Legal on the indemnification waiver. And it has been requested, however, so I'm sure we'll get some very soon now. So that leads to a point that was raised on the list, and we have been aware of expectations from the chartering organizations now for at least for a few days, that the community and the chartering organizations need to know when they will get a supplemental draft and how and what time of timeline is going to be expected for them to discuss it. We think it's an appropriate time for a communication to the community about these next steps, as well as the statement of progress. So our proposal is to what we are planning to do is to inform through a co-chair blog post. And also send this note to the chartering organizations under a cover note that would thank them for the time they've been taking in answering our third report comments, and also indicate the next steps. And basically the next steps that we would provide the update on our work, which is here on your screen, and also indicate that we would we are planning to send a supplemental draft in time for proper chartering organization consideration during the Marrakesh meeting. That would be our proposal. That means that we need to finalize everything in terms of substance, but also finalizing the report, checking with Icahn Legal, ensuring we have Icahn board comments included, including minority views, if need be, obviously, in time for Marrakesh consideration. So in the second half of February, so that's only two to three weeks from now. And that's the plan that we have at this point. And I'm turning to Cavus for the first question. Cavus, I cannot hear you.
If we are going to discuss Becky's proposals on some time, do we come back to recommendation one, or you declare that recommendation one is completed and we only discuss recommendation 11? If that is the case, Becky's proposal would fall. Thank you.
Let's find compromise. That's all I can say. If it's compromise, it's compromise. If everyone's in agreement, then everyone's in agreement. I think there's no... this is about finding consensus on the overall package of recommendations for Workstream 1. So any fully new idea would be certainly inappropriate, but if there's a minor tweak to be had for one of the finalized recommendations, and if it's minor, then and it enables us to reach consensus, then I think it's for the group to decide. Next is Suzanne.
Thank you, Mathieu. Just a quick question for the co-chairs, if I could. We in the GAC have a request from Jorge Concio of Switzerland to, as the five representatives from the GAC to the CCWG, to post very quickly today an update as to what the CCWG is now doing on Recommendation 11. So could I just get some clarification as to when the text might be posted for review so that we can share with our GAC colleagues? Thank you.
I'm not sure I understand which text you're referring to. Because my point is, I think we concluded, and Thomas was chairing at this point, we concluded that we would work on substantial text in a format of a group that would be organized on Thursday. Am I correct, Thomas? I just don't want to misrepresent the conclusions from the earlier points and introduce confusion here.
Thanks, Mathieu. I can confirm that the dedicated calls will deal with Cavus' suggested 60% proposal, Becky's suggested carve-out language, or combinations thereof. These are the options that are currently in front of the group. And the dedicated calls shall produce exact language that could be accepted by all.
Thomas, was my suggestion also on the table? So this is Malcolm's opinion.
Malcolm, we have been... I think that there was some rejection on that suggestion, but I'm happy for you to introduce it during those calls.
Thank you.
So it's not for me to rule that out.
Thank you. Suzanne, if that hasn't cleared your question, let's keep that off list and make sure we can provide the GAC members with the relevant information that they need. Next is Cavus.
That informing her that the only thing that she can report to the GAC is the issue is under discussion on Thursday. So if people want to come on Thursday, mainly Becky's proposal, my proposal, and perhaps some discussions or discussions on Malcolm's proposal. That's all that Suzanne could report. Nothing else. There is nothing to be reported to the GAC except that the issue was deferred for Thursday meeting in a dedicated group. Thank you.
Thank you, Cavus. Athena?
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Sure.
Can you hear me? Yes.
Yeah.
Given the time NTIA needs to process our proposal, I would like to suggest that the chairs reconsider the suggested timeline and have a ratification by ISOs and ACs before Marrakesh. I would like to make sure that NTIA has enough time to process the proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Athena. Just a follow-up question. How would you see a quicker path to approval, exactly, considering the time needed for ISO and AC approval? Past first round timeline was basically 2 months or slightly shorter than 2 months for all the ASO and ACs to come back with feedbacks, and some of them actually did not fully conclude. So honestly, I'm very interested in any option we could have that would bring to faster closure, but it seems quite difficult to conceive. If the chartering orgs are all in agreement and say to us, we can do it faster, let's do it. But I'm not sure that's actually possible in terms of the approval steps, which will be actually made faster in Marrakesh than if it was offline or off-meeting approval processes. But I'm taking any interest on this.
Yes, no, I appreciate very much the work of the group and the work of the co-chairs. And this is a very difficult task, and coordination of the different participants is very difficult and requires some time. At the same time, I think putting some concrete deadlines to feedback and input from the lawyers, from the board, and so on, which I see, the chairs are trying to introduce, and I think the chairs and the group should stick to this deadline, and participants should compromise. We cannot all be super happy with the proposal, and of course we should restrain ourselves from opening new issues and from opening new solutions. I mean, we have a proposal, and let's stick to it unless there are like big implications. Other than that, I understand it's very difficult to push things, and I really, really appreciate the work all done and the coordination by the culture. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Athena, and I do appreciate your concerns as well. I think the one key aspect is that the way we're seeing steps is that Marrakesh would be the timeline for approval of the recommendations, which does not mean that there would be a potential discussion about changing them, because changing them would launch us into actually uncharted territory, because we need to finalize the supplemental draft way before. And if there's any ASO or AC that can provide feedback before Marrakesh, then that's perfectly acceptable. But we need to put that in writing. Next is Brett. I'm seeing Brett in the line. Sorry.
That's okay. If I could, this is just a clerical issue. Do we have a time for the call on Thursday? And do we have an outline for exactly whether it's going to be a full CCWG call? Is that going to be a select group? Could you give me some details on what's going to happen with that call? Thank you.
Thank you, Brett. So that call is going to be a one-topic CCWG call. We do not have a precise timing at this point, but we'll organize it as soon as this one call is finished. I don't know what else I can do on that. Is that answering your question?
It does. Thank you. But my only concern is that there is a GNSO meeting going on Thursday and Friday in L.A., and I want to make sure that the GNSO has a full opportunity to participate, since this is obviously an issue that is of great concern to them. Thanks.
Thanks. That's a good point we were not aware of, and certainly there needs to be I don't think any extra delay can be accommodated, so we need to factor that into our timing and probably reach out to the GNSO as well to see if there's any flexibility that can be given, since, I mean, this extra delay and extra discussion is very much driven by GNSO concerns. I'm sure we can find some ways to accommodate the need to expedite closure on Recommendation 11 and the need for inclusive participation from GNSO stakeholders. So I think we need to make – well, it's just like with the board, obviously, we all have many other things going on and not even mentioning the day jobs. So at some points we need to set priorities. So we'll reach out to ensure we don't have too much conflict, or at least are aware of this. Thank you for mentioning it. Caboose, is that a new hand?
You said that the deadline for the proposal or recommendation 11 and possibly combination 11 and 1 is Monday midnight. So the little group or devoted group should work before that. Why not we maintain the Thursday 12 o'clock UTC to working on this recommendation 11 and possibly recommendation 1? Why you say that you have to work out the time? The time is already set, and why not we use that? Thank you.
I was not aware that this time had been set, but if it's the case, I have no I think we shouldn't discuss time slots during the calls. I'm not sure it's the best use we can make of everyone's time. So we have an action item to come back very quickly with the time and ensure we get we are as inclusive as possible in that. And I think with that, I will close the agenda item regarding the communication and timeline. Thank you, Athena, for your feedback. We'll adjust on according to what I said following your response. And we encourage you to use the tracker that's currently on screen to update your respective groups on where we are. And with that, I'm turning to Thomas for AOB.
Yes, this might be a quick one. Let me just check whether there's any AOB from you. So that doesn't seem to be the case. And let's please conclude the call by reminding ourselves that we're at a very critical juncture in our work. We need to get stress test 18, Rec 11 resolved before Monday 23:59. I think we do have momentum for reaching consensus, and let's all capture that moment and ensure that we can avoid voting on this issue, which I think would be a preferred option for all of us. So thanks for a very constructive call. Have a great day or evening or night, and with that, we would like to adjourn. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.